Deep in the Montana wilderness, 17-year-old Jane lives an isolated existence with her brilliant but increasingly paranoid father. Their 700-square-foot cabin, surrounded by national forest and an hour from the nearest town, is a paradise, according to her father, but increasingly feels like a prison to Jane. Raised since age 4 after her mother supposedly died, Jane's entire worldview has been shaped through homeschooling focused on philosophy, libertarian politics, and distrust of modern society. She's learned practical skills like hunting and lockpicking, but remains isolated from normal teenage experiences. The cracks in their seemingly idyllic existence begin to show when Jane witnesses her father sabotaging equipment being used to clear-cut the forest for power lines. Though he frames it as protecting nature, it reveals his growing willingness to take destructive action. Their isolation is punctuated by occasional trips to town where Jane's friend Heidi points out that Jane will soon be 18 and can't be kept prisoner, a notion Jane defensively rejects despite never having left the property without her father in 13 years. As power lines inch closer to their sanctuary, Jane begins to sense that her father's battle against modernity is futile. The world is changing, technology advancing, and their isolated paradise cannot remain untouched forever. Jane's world shatters when she discovers her father's hypocrisy. He keeps a television in his locked study, despite condemning it in his manifesto. Using a paperclip, she secretly watches shows when he's away. During a program about online predators, she finds a photograph labeled Esme and Teresa, February 83, names she's never heard before. Could her mother be alive? Is Jane even her real name? The contradiction deepens when her father returns with an IBM laptop to publish his manifesto online, justifying this by claiming they must reach digital readers. He surprisingly reveals his past in Silicon Valley. Jane sees opportunity. He's inviting the enemy into our home while failing to see that this connection works both ways. The internet becomes her potential escape portal. Learning HTML coding awakens joy in Jane, the thrill of creation. While her father types his manifesto, she explores the primitive internet of 1996, taking steps toward uncovering her true identity. Jane, as Wolfgirl 96, befriends Lionel, a signal programmer in San Francisco, through an online chat room. This connection feels both thrilling and risky, offering a glimpse beyond her father's control, a bond crucial to her future. After returning from an unexplained absence, her father announces they're visiting an old friend in Seattle, with Jane serving as a distraction. Focused on escape plans, she ignores alarming signs. Her father's changed appearance, a gun in the glove box, and a mysterious leather satchel. At Microsoft's campus, Jane shoots a harassing security guard before fleeing. Her father returns disheveled and orders her to drive to their motel alone. Only later, watching television elsewhere, does Jane discover the horrifying truth. Her father murdered AI researcher Peter Carroll with a homemade bomb. Searching her father's study, Jane finds cash and a birth certificate for Esme Sarah Nowak, revealing her father faked their deaths years ago. Her mother is still alive in California. On a Greyhound bus to San Francisco, Jane, now calling herself Esme, meets her first friend outside Montana. Though this friendship ends with theft, it marks Esme's entry into a wider world. Music washes over her, bringing a new sense of possibility that I could truly become someone entirely different. At Signal's office, Esme finds her online friend Lionel among 20-somethings hunched over keyboards, witnessing the beginning of a digital revolution built on zeros and ones. Lionel helps her secure a job by claiming HTML knowledge, making Esme part of a collective we for the first time. Esme absorbs modern culture voraciously, filling a stolen notebook with references to replace thoughts of her family. Occasional homesickness for Montana's nature strikes, but she buries these feelings. 6 weeks after arriving, Esme learns her father has murdered again, a physicist developing military nanotechnology. Despite seeing the FBI tip line, she can't call. What daughter would turn her father into the enemy? After discovering her father was targeting former colleagues, Esme learns her mother is now Tess Travante, a sociologist studying technology's enhancement of human potential, ironically opposite her father's philosophy. When Lionel confronts Esme about being the bombaster's daughter, she confesses everything. Surprisingly, he takes her hand and agrees to help warn potential targets without reporting her father. That week becomes a blur of happiness as they fall in love. She loses her virginity in those sweet, awkward encounters that felt like love, the amazed awe of being desired exactly as I was. Esme calls these halcyon days, referencing kingfishers nesting during calm before storms. The storm arrives when a mail bomb kills a Harvard professor and injures two students. Esme immediately deletes the Luddite Manifesto site. Meeting her mother disappoints Esme. Though promised not to lose any more time, their embrace feels prickly, tentative, like embracing a cactus. The next morning, Esme's father demands money, Peter's research drive, and her mother's address. Sensing his violent intentions, Esme lies about her mother's whereabouts. When Esme reveals her father is the bombaster, her mother reaches for her phone, not for comfort, but to see if Esme will be convicted before claiming her as daughter. Walking home tearfully, Esme discovers Lionel has taken blame for her deletion of the Luddite Manifesto. The next morning, Esme meets her father, having alerted authorities. As officers surround them, she witnesses the exact moment my father realized I had led them here deliberately. His face broke apart as he understood my betrayal, but what surprised me was the strange light in his eyes, something like wonder, as if only now did he see his worthy adversary. Later, Esme contacts Lionel anonymously for help finding a new name. Her mother never acknowledges her, only releasing a statement calling herself Adam Nowak's first victim. The novel closes with Esme reflecting, "Can we ever escape legacy? I've tried to be neither my mother nor father, but someone wholly myself. Yet their shadows loom over every decision. Life isn't binary choices, but managing the complexities of both and." Through Jane/Esme's journey, we witness both the liberating and destructive potential of the digital revolution. Her father views technology as humanity's downfall, while for Jane, it becomes salvation. The internet provides genuine connection, HTML coding offers creative expression, and the digital realm enables her escape. The novel takes no simplistic stance, suggesting technology itself is neutral, its impact dependent on our usage. Jane/Esme's final reflections show we needn't choose between rejecting or embracing technology. We can appreciate nature while benefiting from modern conveniences, remaining critical of technology's harms while recognizing its benefits. In our era of AI anxiety, social media addiction, and digital surveillance, what kind of paradise reminds us these tensions have existed since the internet's dawn? The pendulum continues swinging between techno-utopianism and neo-Luddism as we navigate this complex landscape.